You ready?
Yep.
Shell, you ready? Good morning. I will call us to order for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, February 3rd, 2015, and ask if everybody would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you and good morning. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. We actually have one person who would like to speak, but it's a topic later on in the agenda, and we've decided we're going to wait till we get to that point, and then we'll have her speak. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the board? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to agency reports, and we have Access and Angie Schreck with us today. Hi, Angie.
Hey.
All right. Well, you'll see that I submitted a report. I hope it got to you guys in time. I want to take this chance to thank the county and the asset group for the continued funding support that we've been able to receive. It has been a long transition for Access in the last couple of years, and we've needed to rely on local funds, and want to thank you again for a pretty significant increase this year. So we have an 18% increase overall with Story County funds to assist for the most part with our shelter. We had a couple of smaller increases with some of our other services. We simply haven't been able to rely on other sources of funds to compensate what our needs are in shelter, and we have decided that we need to increase staffing for at least the near future until we have some of our other sources of or other programs related to housing sorted out. We are pursuing other housing options. We are using HUD money for rapid rehousing. That is, I think, a very successful program, and we plan to continue to increase that money. And rapid rehousing is money for people to quickly get into housing instead of shelter in many cases, or instead of having to go stay with a family or a friend. The challenge in Story County is the amount of housing that's available.
Mm-hmm.
So as we consider other options, we're going to have to work with a lot of strong players to make sure that there's enough housing that's affordable for the victims that we serve. A couple of other things that aren't related to housing, and I'm certainly willing to ask any questions that you might have about housing at any point. We're doing a lot with our sexual assault and domestic violence programs to increase our outreach. That was one of the main goals of some of the reorganization with victim services, is that we were in the community more, that we were reaching underserved populations as much as possible. We felt like we were already doing that pretty well, but I have seen that we've been able to do that more as we've had more focused efforts, as we've had people that are designated to serve within those teams. We're working with the Story County Jail to assess their PREA efforts, which is the Prison Rape Elimination Act effort. So any inmate that is sexually assaulted while they're incarcerated needs to have access to our services. We've always known that the jail is going to connect inmates to us, but we're trying to be a little more systematic and proactive to make sure that we know how that's going to happen. We're working a lot with youth and shelter services to provide services to their youth. We now have two regular groups occurring, one that's they're both gender specific, one that's with males, one that's with females. We have recently in the past 6-7 months established a DART team. That's a domestic abuse response team. Story County has had a sexual assault response team for a number of years, but hasn't necessarily had a formed cohesive DART system. And so we've been able to get a lot of players to the table pretty quickly to review cases. It doesn't necessarily include the response component. We're not all at that scene because that doesn't fit quite as well with domestics as it does with sexual assault. But we are every other week getting together, and it includes all of the Story County partners on a regular basis. One last thing I'll highlight, and then there's a couple of other things listed in your report as well. We've recently joined with Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance to open a new outreach office in Ames. That has been a long process in getting kind of the permits and the public use things figured out with the city, but by July 1st, we anticipate that our domestic abuse outreach team will be co-located with them on 613 Clark, and we're really excited about having more of a public presence with our domestic abuse services. Sometimes when we're at that shelter facility, people don't feel like we're as accessible to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Andy, I'd just say thank you so much. The job you do in Story County is absolutely noticed and appreciated. And this board made a decision a year or so ago when you guys were facing some of the crisis situation that you were facing, that this was a huge priority for Story County and that we needed to step up to the plate in even a greater capacity. I'm glad that Story County can be helpful. I would love to think there was going to come a day where your services were not going to be as necessary. I think that's wishful thinking, and so we need to be prepared to stand ready whenever we can. Wayne, anything?
Just to add, as I was looking at a DART program and the players that are at the table for these ongoing coordinations, do you have other educational components or opportunities to interact with the ISU departments? You know, you look at fraternities, you look at a lot of the issues, and when we talk about some of the issues that, you know, have happened in the last, few years, are you all used as a resource for these entities in education and also people who might have sexual assault encounters, that they feel like that you are a welcoming place that they can come and get the support that they need?
Absolutely. I probably failed to highlight ISU as much in this report as I would have in maybe a larger general asset report. We have placed a sexual assault advocate on campus on a very regular basis. She's housed at the Armory with ISU police, but also can go to other sites because maybe folks don't want to go to a police involved site. And then we're starting to do that with our domestic abuse advocate that is designated towards campus outreach, that she's spending more time on campus. That gives victims ready access to us, but it also gets us involved in so many of the systems at Iowa State. Things move at a pretty fast pace there, especially with some of the pressures that they have now with some federal mandates.
Right.
And so we need to be at the table as many conversations as possible. So I rely on those two campus-based advocates, but I am also spending a lot of time in those committees formulating plans for prevention and outreach, formulating plans for policies, and making sure that we're kind of at the right place at the right time to reach students.
Great. I kind of thought you was, but thank you. Appreciate that update.
Thanks, Angie.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Next item is consideration of minutes from January 27th.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any corrections or additions? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions. Please note that we're changing the effective date for Cody Breimeyer to February 22nd of 2015.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Personnel actions pass. Please add road closure 1529 to the consent agenda and consider consent agenda.
Move approval with noted change.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. No public hearing items today. Additional items. Discussion and consideration of FY16 asset recommendation for Story County funding. Deb Shildroth. Hi, Deb.
Good morning, Board. How are you?
Good morning.
Deb Shildroth with Story County Community Services, and we're going to talk this morning about the recommendations from the asset volunteers for fiscal year 16. This is a little bit different this year because we're only looking at Story County funds. The mental health and disability service funds are handled now through the region, so I did provide that information to you just as an FYI. But that will be addressed with the governing board of the region. So we're just looking at Story County funds, the general basic, local option, and public health dollars this morning. And just a few, excuse me, a few services to highlight. I'll echo what Angie Schreck said just a little while ago in terms of the shelter that Access operates. We did give that a significant bump for next fiscal year. If you recall, domestic assault and domestic abuse services went through a regionalization process a few years ago, and the region that Story County is in for those services, the shelter is located in Fort Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
But we continue to see the need and the demand for the shelter here locally, so it is primarily supported by local dollars.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bump that's there. If you go down to the Boys and Girls Club of Story County, that the social adjustment service, Erica, who works there at Boys and Girls Club, she is working on expanding some after-school program with the Nevada Community Schools. There's a pilot project going on right now for the remainder of this fiscal year, but then she did ask for additional dollars from United Way and the county to help support that program and on a full-time basis in fiscal year 16. So that's the reason behind the recommendation for that particular service. Under Heartland Senior Services, the Adult Day Center, they are asking for general basic dollars to help cover individuals who are on the sliding fee scale and have problems with being able to pay for those services, yet they're not eligible for the Medicaid program that helps pay for those services, so they're kind of falling through a gap. And we will get, as with these services, we will get specifics on client statistics and who's utilizing those services when the agency draws the dollars down. So anyway, that's what's accounting for the bump in that recommendation. I think Heartland asked for general basic dollars last year. We didn't really have enough to provide to them, but this year we did have that opportunity. Lutheran Services in Iowa, their crisis child care, that's a very unique service here in Story County, and they were asking for an increase across all funders. It's where they have families on call, so that if an individual family calls and says, you know, the child needs to be temporarily removed from the home, the child has a place to go for respite while things settle down within that home environment and a plan can be developed. So, again, quite a unique service, and a demand continues for that service as well. The next service is Micah's Dental Clinic. They have a full-time dentist on staff right now. We got to meet him the evening of the hearings. We're requesting additional funds from all funders. Dropping down to Raising Readers, last year we funded one of their services, and this year they were asking for funds through their family development and education. This is primarily addressing children 5 years of age and younger and engaging them in reading activities and exposure to reading materials. And so That's why that request is made to fully fund that particular program. That's, you know, that Raising Readers is an example of a grassroots agency that was on its own with a volunteer basis for about 10 years. And so they're new into the asset process this current fiscal year, and they now have a director on site, and so I think we're really seeing a lot of the programs take off and a lot of good collaboration with the other organizations within the community. If you go to the next page, visiting Nurse Services of Iowa, their foster grandparent program, they were new into the process this fiscal year as well. They took over the program from the previous agency. And so we had just funded them at what we had funded them the previous year. Their costs are going up, and they are looking at bringing on additional grandparent volunteers so they can be in more of the schools. So that was the bump in that increase. And then I think that would be it for the general basic dollars. Local option is pretty well self-explanatory there. We have about $108 left unallocated in local option. And then public health, of course, we rely on the state. We're the pass-through for those state funds. But we provided the allocation there, and that will be dependent on what we see in state funding we'll know more of that towards the end of the legislative session. I believe that's it as far as pointing out specific services. Are there any questions or comments?
I'd just say that that this board, and this is more a comment for the public, this board made a decision early on in our time together that the asset process is one of the really, really good things that we have here in Story County. I believe it's the right way to fund these ultra-important services. It creates a system where you have partnerships between ISU and the City of Ames and United Way and Story County. I think we've done a really nice job over the last 5 years now, stepping up and making sure that our funding and our increases in funding were matching those of our partners. We do it again this year. It's about a 12%, just over 12% increase that we're talking about this year. And I think it's the right thing to do. I think this is a great process, and Deb, I appreciate your leadership in the process, and I think we need to keep moving forward.
Yeah, well stated.
I'll move approval of the asset recommendations.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. Deb, thanks.
All right. Thank you. Deb. And if you want to go onto the asset website, the recommendations for all funders and all services are located on that website. And there was about $3.6 million allocated from all the funders for those services for fiscal year 16. So it's good information out there.
Okay. Thanks, Deb.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion and consideration of the communications marketing plan and strategies, Leanne Harder. Hi, Leanne.
Good morning. I'm Leanne Harder, County Outreach and Special Projects Manager. What I have before you today is the second year in a row that the board will be considering a communications plan. You'll recall last year this was a new initiative and direction in which the board headed. I have a few slides just to walk you through some of the changes, but then also note the commonalities from this plan, between this plan and last year's plan. I do want to note one thing. I originally was trying to get this on the agenda for a couple weeks ago, so when we do get to the point that I'm making a recommendation where it says January on the cover, we'll be recommending it. It says February. My apologies.
Okay.
Again, this was identified. These same goals, five goals, were identified in 2014. Why I'm suggesting that these goals have not changed. They remain consistent as we go forth into 2015. What I'll do this year, though, is at the end of the year come back with you on how we've achieved the goals, how the strategies we've identified have helped us realize the five that are listed up there, and I won't read that, but in essence, it's increasing the transparency in our ability to communicate with several target audiences, which takes me into this next slide. The communications plan last year identified five target audiences, starting with county employees. We have several of those in several different buildings throughout Story County. And then going on with public officials, not only those that serve Story County through the various boards and commissions, but numerous elected officials in city councils, township trustees, school boards, school districts. And then the general public. You know, we are here to serve the citizens of Story County, and we should have communication strategies that address their needs and their questions. And then the media. We have a good partnership that we've started to build with the media, and I hope we can continue that and craft communication strategies that keep them informed so that we can continue to inform our general public. And then lastly, other. We are the crossroads of the United States. We have I-35 going through Ames and Story County. We have U.S. Highway 30. We have other state highways. We have the UP Railway. There are a lot of visitors that come through Story County for whatever means, whether that be visiting a child at Iowa State or here for a football game. There's still those individuals that we need to identify strategies to whom to address. So I'm recommending those remain consistent this year, same five targeted audiences. And that gets us to the strategies. What I'm going to do is, these are identified in the plan. There are 15 strategies. Actually, there may be 16.
16.
The first arrows I bring up are two current strategies in our communications plan. That's the newsletters and the quadrant community meetings. I intend to carry these forth this year, but with some modifications. The newsletter, as the board knows, is being enhanced by the weekly happenings that I try to get out every Wednesday or Thursday of the week. That really does follow up on the board's meetings of the regular Tuesday meeting, anything that happened the preceding week. And then the quadrant community meetings, you'll recall we did those last fall. We're looking at doing them in two different approaches this year. In the springtime, we would do either day or night. I think we decided, I put out there that we would do daytime meetings in the spring and then go back this fall and do nighttime meetings. See if we can increase participation, give other options for the general public and those other elected officials to be aware of what's happening in Story County. These orange arrows that then just came up are the new strategies. New strategies are something that will strengthen building on activities from last year. Video productions, two-fold approach. One, this is general Story County. What are we about? And then more department office specific, working with elected officials and department heads that want to do a video specific for their area.
And Leanne, you're talking about an intern for that possibility?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Speakers Bureau, getting out there, taking our story public and getting to the Rotaries, the Kiwanis, the different service organizations to, again, build awareness of Story County and get an idea what the questions are out there from the general public.
Sounds like a good job for Wayne Clinton to me.
Well, it's a great segue onto National County Government Month. Wayne brought this forward to my attention. Every year in April, NACO, National Association of Counties, celebrates National County Government Month. Honestly, we have not done anything in recognition of that for at least 10 years. There are a number of strategies, specific highlighted strategies that are identified in the plan that will really target this outreach tool and really strengthen our focus in that regard. The intranet development and deployment, that was actually on my work program. I've transferred it over here to the communications plan. It's a more appropriate place. United Way Day of Caring, that happens every September annually. A trade show toolkit. There are a lot of departments that go out there and in different venues and need materials, whether brochures, a display board, whatever it might be. A great example is the Connect Iowa certification ceremony. Connect Iowa had their nice banner. We didn't have anything displaying Story County. Putting that together, updating a county services sheet, that's what you see when you enter behind where Darla sits, the main building here, and all the other county buildings. As we change the services Story County is providing as of July 1st, or if not sooner, we'll need to update that to reflect those changes. Leadership Nevada, this is a biannual event, and this is the year that we'll be doing Leadership Nevada, the county government session. Then Box City Festival, and this is a partnership, first and foremost, with Nevada School District, multi-age community, but I've had requests from other school districts to take it forward, but this March, April, May, we'll be working with Nevada School District. So what that means, there's a lot of steps and specific items I drilled down into, and I don't expect anyone to really be able to read that, sorry, in the audience, but this is really a snapshot of what it means throughout the year. Those blue boxes are those where the activity will be occurring, extending through from January through the end of this calendar year. And so with that, I do recommend adoption of the proposed plan. I do have one modification that I do need to say other than the cover sheet on page 1 in the box. Again, I referenced January 2015. It should read February 2015. With that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Just more of a comment, Leanne, and a follow-up. Both, as you're well aware, that Renee and I serve as co-chair for the United Way campaign for Story County. And I know over the years we've had a few employees have at least asked to whether or not we would consider having them engaged in this Day of Caring. And we found out last year that there is a deadline to submit our intent. So I'm asking if you would follow up to make sure that we do that. And then the other question that we would like to talk to, and maybe talk to EAC or wherever, a lot of the other businesses, they have their own, they have the T-shirts, and or they can get something from Story County, from United Way with different colors that identify them. And I wanted to find out if that's something that we might want to consider to do, if we find out ahead of time how many people are actually going to participate in that regard. So.
And that's a great point. Thank you, Wayne. I didn't drill down into the specifics, but under that United Way Day of Caring, the first step is going to be an employee participation survey that would go out this May.
Okay.
And then it's called the Business Day of Caring form. That's a form that's submitted by the entity that wishes to participate or offer volunteer services in September. That's due in July. So I have those on my radar, and we'll get those out.
Great.
As following the calendar.
Good. Thank you.
Uh-huh. And so that I'm clear, so we'll do a survey of employees to find out who would be interested. Then it would come back to this board probably in June to determine right. if we're going to go ahead. You'd need to file the letter of intent in July, and then it occurs in September every year. Is that right?
I think it's the first Friday.
First Friday.
The United Live breakfast.
It's breakfast. Usually it's the first Friday in September.
Well, clearly when we reorganized and shifted Leanne's position out of planning and development and into this county outreach coordinator, it was based on a recognition that we in Story County needed to do a better job communicating with all those entities that she listed there. I think this is the right next step for us to take, adding these initiatives. Leanne, I appreciate the work that you've put into this point.
Okay.
Thoughts, Paul?
No. I think she's done a good job. And, okay. I would echo what you said about the change in our position. I mean, it was obvious that had put a lot on our plate while she was the director of planning and development, I'm happy to see the change.
Good. With that, I would move adoption of the communication marketing plan as put forth, with the change of February on the brochure rather than January. Sure, y'all was listening.
Got a motion, a second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Leanne, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion of benefit options for non-union employees. Alyssa Wignall. And Lisa Markley, we are going to talk money, so you might as well start there as well.
Okay.
Alyssa, thanks for getting this on the agenda. Thanks for the work that you've put into this point. What I would like you to do, if you're okay with it, is just, you and I have been working on this, if not daily, it sure feels like daily, but the other two board members have not had quite the opportunity at this point. Start from the very beginning and take us through. So the Affordable Care Act passes. Talk us through from there.
Sure. It's been a few years past that we've had to implement a few things with our group health insurance, and it actually goes back to about 2010. They make some changes. If you look at the Affordable Care Act, there's different deadlines that you have to meet and be in compliance with everything. So one of the first changes we had to make, you had to offer dependent coverage to dependents up to age 26. So we made that change, and then the next one in 2011, we didn't have much. 2012. There were some changes with the Women's Health Amendment. Preventatives were now covered under non-grandfathered plans. Different things that went with that. We also had to comply with any W-2 reporting. So the auditor's office had to get premium information on W-2s to comply with that. In 2013, one of the they put a cap on the flex spending account, which we had already done previously because our plan year runs on a fiscal, not on a calendar. So when they were going to cap the flexible spending account at $2,500, which the county had previously allowed employees to allocate up to $5,000 a year into that, we went ahead and made that change. So we actually complied with that one before it was necessary. Then last year in 2014, they had the healthcare exchanges came into place, the individual mandate. There were no pre-existing for all ages. There were some wellness incentives out there. We also had to take a look at our waiting period to make sure our waiting period complied with the 90-day, which we only have a 30-day waiting period in the month following. So we were in compliance with that. Now we're into 2015. It's where the different things come into play with large employers. You must provide minimum value insurance. And you have to offer insurance to all your employees, and they have to has to be affordable. So that's where we're at right now with that. We will also, at the end of 2015, they're not due until February of 2016, we have all our reporting requirements. So all our 1094Cs and 1095Cs have to be submitted to make sure we're in compliance with all the reporting requirements.
At some point during that time frame that you lay out from 2010, I guess through a year from now, next February, at some point we decided that we were going to start requiring proof of insurance or showing of an insurance card. When did we do that, and was it based on this? Remind me how this board came to that conclusion.
It was 2012, I believe. And what we did there is because everybody had to have insurance. So we had the option where if you – you know, you could waive our insurance and take the benefit in cash. We did not state you had to have insurance to take that benefit in cash. So what we did is we updated our flex plan document. Mm-hmm. I did work with Susan Freed back then in 2012 to get that update, make sure everything that we did was compliant at that point. We didn't have a lot of the regulations at that point, what was coming forward. But we went ahead and made that change. So if they provide proof, just they sign a waiver saying I have insurance outside of here. You offered insurance, but I'm choosing not to take the group health insurance. And then they can take that benefit in cash.
Okay. So we did make that this board made that change
correct.
Based on what we expected
what we
from
expected.
The Affordable
Care Act. Correct.
Then the first time, so Susan Freed is an attorney from Des Moines who specializes in health care matters.
Mm-hmm.
First time I met her was sometime in 2013. Talk a little about what led to that meeting and that meeting. And then we'll talk about what happened after that.
After that? Okay. Yep. So Susan and I, you know, every once in a while they come out with something new. And so I just ask her whether, you know, what do they consider seasonal employees was one of the questions that I had as far as how many hours can they work? Is there going to be a seasonal exemption, stuff like that? So I worked with her on that. She updated our plan documents back in 2012. They had not been updated for quite a while, and things change, so you want to make sure they're up to date if you ever have an audit. So she updated our medical, dependent care, and our flex plan document. And at that point, we kind of looked at everything to see, okay, we just want to make sure we're going to be compliant with everything when all of these regulations come down the pike. So when stuff started to come forward and you're reading the regulations and you're looking at stuff, we decided back in, I think it was September of 2013, we took all of our information down there and met with Susan. I believe you were there. Jessica Reynolds was there. Debbie Dean met with us. And I think Jim Hanks was also there.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked her to give us an opinion on our current system, how we do things. And at that point, we were compliant. The only issue was whether it would be being compliant with the affordability on the individual mandate side. And we had to wait for regulations. Now, that regulation did come out in late November of this year.
Okay. And which I'll just say I found out about on January 2nd. Why? So we go down and we meet with Debbie Dean. And as I recall, we came back and we gave a report to this board at some time after that on what was going on there. And so the question I keep getting is, so there's a possibility that the rules are going to change. There's a possibility that we're not going to be able to continue to pay flex cash or provide health benefits as we currently are. Why didn't we change things right then?
That was a determination made by the board.
Board, you got any weigh in on that? Why didn't we change flex cash back in 2012 when we saw that this might be happening, or 2013?
Well, it's to me, it's pretty obvious with the reaction that we've gotten since we've made the announcement that this is going to change. People wanted to leave it the way it was. They didn't want the flex cash to go away. They still don't want the flex cash to go away. And a year ago in October, when we found out that that was a possibility, we decided as a board that we were going to leave things the way they were because that's what we believed would. Was what the majority of the employees wanted. And now here we are, a year and a half later, and we don't have that option. So that's where we're at.
Well, the only thing I would add is I think you're absolutely correct, but I'm reminded of one of my favorite soul singers, Sam Cooke, and the song is "A Change Is Gonna Come." And we are now at that point in time. We thought that we were honoring the majority wishes of our employees by continuing the flex cash options that was there. And we've since found out that that is no longer an option that we can move forward with under the current structure. And so we're working diligently to come up with options and opportunities as we move forward, knowing full well that because of the size of our employees, that we do have to offer a plan. And so I think we're at that junction to begin to see where this is going to take us over the next few months, and hopefully we'll have everything in place as soon as possible.
I think it's a great segue. Alyssa, anything to add on how we got to today?
No. Nope.
So going forward from today, let's start with this. Take the board through every other entity that you've looked at, I'm not asking you to list every other entity, but give the board an idea of every other entity that you've looked at and generally what you found out that other like entities provide. Take the board through what kind of options are before the board, what kind of things we could do in order to comply. Let's start there, and then we'll go from there on the conversation.
Okay. First of all, comparisons, looking at different counties, there is a survey of benefits out there on the ISAC website that's pretty useful. It doesn't have an exhausted list because each county may have more than one or two options and different employee and employer percentages based on whether they're union, non-union. So I did take a look at all of that. I also have a health insurance survey that was put together by the HR director for the city of Indianola when they were looking at benefits and doing different things. So I not only do I have all the counties, I also have information for 23 cities. So there's a pretty good sample here. And we're talking cities. We're talking the city of Ames, Ankeny, Johnston. So relatively close in the geographical area. Des Moines, West Des Moines, they may be larger than us. Some are smaller, have less population, employee population than we do. Counties, I've looked at Polk, Webster, Pottawatomie, Dallas County, Johnson County.
You're saying more in depth, so you looked at every county.
I looked at
generally.
Every county generally, and then I did look at some of these other counties that are more either they're real close to us, because I looked at Polk. They're close. They're a lot larger than we are, so sample size, employee-wise, we don't compare. But then I look at Dallas County, Blackhawk County, Johnson, Warren County, Woodbury County, Webster, all those different type of counties is who I look at.
So, board, any questions about who Alyssa's been looking at in order to gather information on what's available out there? All right, so what are you generally finding from looking at
I generally find that the majority of the cities and counties pay 90% or better on a single plan.
Okay.
They pay, and then they pay a huge portion of the family plan.
By huge portion, you're
80,
talking?
80, 85, a lot of them are in the 90% range.
Okay.
And deductible-wise, I can find anything from $100 deductible up to a $2,000 deductible. It kind of depends. Some counties offer different plans, and their percentages are based on those plans. So they may pay a higher percentage at a little bit larger deductible versus the $250 or $500 single deductible.
Okay. In looking at it all, is there anybody out there that you can find that provides health benefits as Story County currently provides them?
Not a city or county, no.
Okay. Any other questions along about what she's finding in these? All right, so options before this board.
Okay.
And again, I'm going to say this probably four times while we're talking this through. We are not talking about what's going to happen with our collective bargaining units. That's got to go through its process. We've got to negotiate in good faith there. We don't know where those are going to end up. We're talking about our non-union employees right now.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So all options on that I've explored and that we can do. Right now, our flexible benefit, we have 575. The mandatories come off of that.
Tell me the mandatories real quick.
Mandatories would be life insurance, short-term disability, and long-term disability.
And what does that cost? So 575 is this number that's out there. That's what mm-hmm. everybody thinks they're getting. What are people really getting? What are people really able? If they don't take anything that the county offers, what do they get every month?
Anywhere from $550 on down to $540. The premiums for your short-term and long-term disability are based on your annual salary. So they range from, low $20 monthly to our highest, which is $35.19
Good.
A month.
Mm-hmm.
So to be in compliant with the affordability portion, meaning the employee pays no more than 9.56%, you can remove the cash option. They have to allocate it to all health insurance.
So you're saying stay exactly where we are now, $575 a month, but you either use it toward insurance or you don't get anything.
Correct. That's an option.
Okay.
Second option is you can take it a look at that $575 once you subtract out that mandatories, which we'd have to subtract the largest mandatory out to get us to what are we actually putting towards single health insurance.
Okay.
And after that's subtracted out, we have about $540 roughly. $540 out of that $575 that goes towards health insurance. After the mandatory comes off the top of that.
That's based on our current plans.
Current, yeah.
Okay.
So
there's nothing left.
Not if you use the federal poverty level.
Okay.
There's 22 cents.
And tell us the options again. Now, we could use the federal poverty level. We could use our lowest current paid employee.
Correct.
Which is changeable.
Yeah.
So, board, I mean, this is something that you need to weigh in on. Two options when the federal government goes to determine if we're providing adequate minimum coverage, you can either hold up your lowest paid employee and say, yeah, 9.56%.
9.56, yeah.
Yes, we're providing a benefit that does not require them to put in more than 9.56%. But that could change depending on what happens with your employees. Or you can use this federal poverty level.
It's a safe harbor. These are safe harbors because we don't have
income. Which if you do that, you know you're good no matter what else happens.
Mm-hmm. Now understand if you use the lowest paid individual, if you have somebody that comes in at a lower paid, their salary is lower, that would change that figure on an annual basis. That figure could change too based on how much your premiums increase.
Now, let me ask this question, knowing that that's an option, and let's say that you were going to use the lowest paid employee, is that based on a certain calendar period, like a year previous? Because I could see a new employee coming in, and if counties thought that they could save money or entities thought they could save money in the insurance market, they might want to offer a lower insurance. Is that a probability? Is that something that could happen? I'm not saying it would, but how do you determine, at what point do you determine the lowest salaried individual and apply that formula as you would move forward, if that was the direction we went?
The way they're going to determine whether you're providing, my understanding, the way they're going to determine whether you're providing affordable coverage for your employees is the reporting requirements, the 1094Cs and the 1095Cs. That's on a calendar year. So those are due in 2016. I'm going to look at 2015 hours, wages, what we offered. I don't have everything all worked out there.
Uh-huh.
That's the next step of that. So.
Well, again, but if you go to the federal poverty level, it's not a moving target.
Right. It's not a moving target.
Okay.
So that's the most predictable standard to use as a federal.
That's one of the recommended strategies, the safe harbor that they actually recommend to use.
Uh-huh.
Tell me one more time. If we went with the federal poverty level and continued to offer what we're offering now, how much would be left for somebody to take home? Inflex.
Right now, there's 20 with our premiums. The current premiums.
With the current premiums.
Effective July 1st, because I do have those renewals of just what would be. We'd have 22 cents left. So that 575 isn't going to work.
Okay.
If you were to keep the flex benefit of 575, even using the federal poverty level, as our premiums increase, you'd have to increase that. You couldn't sustain that level. Another option, cover 100% of single coverage for health and or dental. I haven't really talked about dental a lot. I'm kind of keeping that to the side. The Affordable Care Act just covers health insurance.
Okay.
Another option, you can cover a portion of single and a portion of family.
Okay.
You could pay 100% of single and a portion of family. You can lump the percentages in there for health, dental, and vision and pay a certain percentage of each. Those are kind of the same options. Something else you can do is you can completely separate health insurance and then the other insurance benefits, dental, vision, all the mandatory.
That aren't under the Affordable Care Act,
so completely separate those. You can offer, when you're looking at the health insurance, get your percentages. You can pay a percentage of single and family. Make sure you comply with it so it's affordable for our employees. And then there is something that is allowable. We could continue our Cafeteria 125 plan for dental and vision.
Okay. And that's flex.
Correct.
What about just beefing up flex, taking flex from 575 to 875 or to 1,000, and then carving off the portion that would have to go toward insurance? What happens there? It's allowable, right?
That is allowable. You have to carve out that portion. So whatever portion of the premium, whether it be $540 that has to go towards, if you use the federal poverty level, you know, out of that $850, whatever, that $540 can only be used for health insurance. You can also use it for dental and vision, and then you can also put some into a flexible spending account, but they did cap that also.
Okay.
For employer contributions. There are some regulations for that.
Okay.
They can do the rest. You can do with what you want.
Could you explain a little bit, what do you mean by you could put it into a flexible spending account? Does that mean each employee?
Medical. We currently have a flexible spending account. We've got a medical reimbursement. You have a dependent care. So right now we have employees. I put money into a medical reimbursement. It's pre-tax dollars that I put in there, and I can, you know, submit my receipts, and I get reimbursement for my medical bills. I also do that for dependent care. Now, you do have to keep, when you carve out this X amount of dollars, you have to keep dependent care out of that because that's not a health benefit.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Now, just to add confusion to it, I think it's appropriate at this point that we stop and talk about how Story County would actually pay for any of these options. Because that is a reality that we're facing, and that's, Lisa, why you're sitting here. Try to help us go through and understand the differences in capacity that we have in Story County, where we could pay for some of these things, but where we can't pay for some of these things, and how that all works. And the first question I'll ask you is, based on our initial budget figures, where are we expecting our general fund ending fund balance to come in?
Based on our initial figures before we started talking any of these items, my initial numbers to you were 16% in the general fund.
And we like to have?
And we like to have 25%. That's our goal. And that is with the flexible benefit plan being paid from the general fund. And let me clarify, it depends on where you're paid from as to where your flex comes from. In other words, all of the county employees that are paid from the general fund, their flex comes from the general fund at this point. All of the county employees that paid for from the rural fund comes from the rural because that's the way the code tells us to do things.
But a majority of our employees are paid through the general fund.
Correct.
And how much did we spend last year in flex benefits?
$2.3 million
last year. How much would, in the original budget, how much would we spend in this upcoming fiscal year, knowing that we're reducing our number of employees through the loss of CLP?
$1.8 million
this coming year. Okay. So even with that going down by $500,000, our ending fund balance was still in a precarious position at 16%.
Correct.
Do we have capacity to raise the dollars in the general fund?
You have the ability as the Board of Supervisors to certify a budget that actually exceeds the maximum levy in the general fund. The maximum levy in the general fund is $3.50. You have the ability to do that by having two public hearings as opposed to one on your budget and having a unusual need to do it. So in other words, there it's spelled out why you can actually exceed your $3.50, and there are counties out there that do exceed the $3.50. That's one way.
But an unusual need.
Yes.
And I would assume not paying for something in a fund in order to pay for it that should be paid for in that fund in order to pay for it in the general fund is not an extraordinary need.
Right.
And the general fund is the only one that's affected here because you are maxed out already in your mental health fund.
Right.
You are maxed out. The secondary road fund only gets funds from the rural levy, which is transferred to them. And the rural fund has numerous restrictions on it already, and you will not reach the max in that one.
Okay. So if we comply with the Affordable Care Act, when we comply with the Affordable Care Act, does it open any options to us to pay for health benefits in a different fund than we are currently allowed to pay for it?
Yeah. Years ago, the determination – let me back up. Part of what I do every year when I put a budget together to present to you people is determine where we're paying for things, where else we can pay from things if necessary, what the rule, what the code says as to where funding comes from. So every few years I look at, okay, we're paying for these things out of the supplemental fund. And by the supplemental fund, I mean the general supplemental fund, which means anything paid from the general can have also things paid from the supplemental. One of the things that we've always paid for from the supplemental fund is the employee benefits under chapters 96, 97, and 97, 96 and 97, which is FICA and IPERS. So that is always been done out of the supplemental fund.
But supplemental is really restrictive into what you can pay.
Supplemental has a list of what we can and cannot pay. One of the items is tort liability insurance, which we do, property insurance, which we do, and any other insurance that may be necessary in the operation of county costs. Okay? Our flex benefit plan did not qualify because it was not primarily insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance qualifies, so we can pay for that out of the supplemental fund. Okay, that is how the majority of the counties do fund their benefits for employees that are paid for out of the general fund, because they do not provide flex; they provide insurance. So that is where you can do that. There is no levy limit in the supplemental fund. There is just a limit on what you can pay for from it.
Okay. And health benefits, if it's for health benefits,
yes,
only,
yes,
would qualify under,
yes,
that. And so that I understand, in our general basic, we don't have any capacity for additional dollars unless we exceed the maximum allowable levy rate.
Correct.
In our supplemental, if we move cost into supplemental as allowed by the code to be in supplemental, the capacity is only restrained by our willingness to raise the levy rate.
Correct.
In order to pay for it.
Correct.
What about transferring funds between the general to the supplemental and the supplemental to the general?
We've done that in the past. We are able to do that.
One way or both ways?
You can do it. You can only transfer from the general to the supplemental. You cannot transfer from the supplemental back to the general.
Okay.
The other funds that we're talking about are the rural and the secondary roads fund, and those are also you pay for all the benefits out of those. So we do need to look at how those are going to be affected also. Because you pay for your total package out of those.
Okay. But we already are paying, yes, for those employees,
yes,
out of those anyway, so then it just becomes a function of what
setting the levy high enough for, or
to cover whatever it is we decided to.
Yeah, putting the levy in the rural fund where it needs to be in order to cover that.
Okay. It's fairly confusing. I get that it's fairly confusing. I wanted Lisa to be here to lay it out for you guys and so that we have it all on the record. Do you have any questions for her about funding for this kind of thing and what our limitations are in the general fund and what our ability to not have as much limitations are in the supplemental fund? Any questions about why Flex currently does not fit in the supplemental fund, but if we go to a pure health benefit, it would fit in the supplemental fund?
No, I think Lisa's done a good job in keeping me up to date and answering questions that I've had through the process, and mm-hmm. so I feel very comfortable that she has given us an analysis clearly in terms of what our capacities are within those funding areas and what limitations as well as where we can perhaps fund our health benefits different than what we've done in the past. So I feel very comfortable about the analysis that she's done, and I really want to thank you, Lisa, for that, because as you well know, I don't consider this an area that's one of my strengths, and so when we can turn to you and Rick to take the lead on behalf of the board to kind of put all this together, it's very helpful to have that background analysis, so thank you.
Lisa, I'm going to have more for you in just a minute.
So.
Okay, so Alyssa, I've got that you laid out four possible options for this board to consider.
And there's one more that I didn't quite get to.
Okay.
That we don't currently, we do have the option of having a high deductible plan tied to an HSA.
Okay.
We have the option out there right now. The premium is not that much different than our $2,000 PPO plan.
Okay.
So there's not a lot of cushion as far as, okay, so we have a little bit less premium and we can fund a health savings account for our employees.
So somebody suggested in one of our meetings, I think it was the one that Susan Freed was here, why don't we just go get health insurance that costs $175 a month and then we put the rest into Flex for our employees? Is that what you're talking about, having just a terrible plan, but you're saying it wouldn't be $175?
No, it doesn't have to be, you know, a terrible plan. A high deductible plan, you can have a $2,500 single and a $5,000 family plan. Typically, your premiums will be low enough. I mean, when the employees go to the doctor, they pay 100% towards that deductible. I mean, if they go five times, they pay 100% of their bill until they reach that deductible point. And then once they reach that deductible, the insurance pays at 100%. Some cities and counties have that as an option. That's, I think West Des Moines has it as an option out there, along with three or four other options for their employees. The premium's a little bit lower, so then they take that excess between what they're putting in that towards that premium, the employer's putting towards that premium, and they fund part of that HSA.
So based on age of the employees and their overall health record and how often they may think they would have to go to the doctor, would probably necessitate them looking at perhaps a higher deductible, someone that was probably more frequent users or needed to go might want to not have as much. Help me understand a little bit the type of demographics that we would probably look for in terms of Story County employees if one of these options was out there.
You know, employees have to make that determination on their own whether it would work for them. For somebody that doesn't go to the doctor, you know, or they don't think they're going to go to the doctor, they may feel that this is a great plan for them. Then you have the ones that go frequently. They may not reach the $2,500 deductible, so they are paying. They wouldn't see a benefit of that 100% paid after they reach that deductible. You have an employee that knows they're going to have a hip replacement or whatever, and that year they know they're, no matter what plan they're on, they're going to reach their out-of-pocket max. So they look at a plan like this, well, I'm going to, you know, with my deductible, my co-insurance, and my out-of-pocket max, I'm going to pay $2,500.
In addition to the premiums that you're paying.
Correct. So that might be, you know, for people that use it a lot, they, you know, and have high medical, it's not a bad option either. It's just right now with the way our premiums are and our utilization, we don't have a lot of difference between our health savings account and the $2,000 or the $1,000 PPO plan to
not enough
to
of
fund
a savings
much.
In your premiums.
Correct.
In order to fund the $2,500.
I mean, if you're going to go with a high deductible plan like that, typically you see the employer putting a portion in the health savings account to cover. Since they are paying 100%, they put that in there for the employee to utilize.
All right.
But wouldn't something like that be better as an option?
Yeah. And I'm not saying it wouldn't be. You know, just if I look at what we currently have without getting, you know, any other bids back from carriers, what our current 8 options we can choose, there's just not enough room in those premiums to make sense getting that option and having it available, just because the Story County wouldn't be able to put enough into their HSA to make it worthwhile for that employee. We'd be pushing 100% of the claims on them until they reach that deductible.
Okay.
And that's just from what I've taken a look at.
Okay, so that takes care of high deductible. Paul, I agree with what you just said. It sounds to me like that might be a good option as part of our plans, but to force all of our employees to have that as their